from House members that are here.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And thank you to the Honorable ex-President Pro Tem from Lake Oswego. Steve, it's all yours. What do we need to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today we have scheduled a brief orientation for you on the subcommittee, and the purpose of this orientation is to give you an idea of what the work plan and expectations are for the subcommittee this session, as well as to tell you a little bit about the process. For those of you who are new Ways and Means members, this should be very helpful, and for those of you who are returning, there are some changes from previous sessions, so it's important to indicate what those are. What I'd like to start off with is I have distributed, and it should probably be right under your agenda for today, a list of committee rules. And these are the committee rules that the full Ways and Means Committee adopted earlier this session. The subcommittee does not have its own rules, but there are a number of rules that specifically apply to the subcommittee and that make the subcommittee function differently from other committees upon which you may be serving. The rules themselves don't have these highlighting. I added the highlights to point out a few things that I'd like to make sure that all of the subcommittee members understand. And a lot of these things really haven't changed from last session, but note that both of the co-chairs are voting subcommittee members, and they can come in and vote on any issue that is before you. This is Rule 5 that I'm looking at here. If we skip ahead to Rule 8, we see that joint committee reports, bills, and resolutions are sent to the floor of either house without a minority report. So minority reports are not accepted in this committee under the rules of the Ways and Means Committee. And additionally, in Rule 8 here, you can see that if a member plans to oppose a committee bill, he or she should advise the House or Senate co-chair in advance of debate on their respective house. So you're in no way restricted by the vote of the subcommittee or the full committee, but you are requested to notify the House or Senate co-chair if you are going to be opposing any bill that comes out.
And Steve, this also, I read that thing that the full committee cannot send out a minority report also.
That is correct. Full committee also cannot send that lady on.
Hey, sorry.
Well, you got a demerit by your name.
You're
right. You and Elaine.
Because your leader over on the other side had none of it.
Yeah, I know. Lots of committees. Thank you.
What we're doing right now is we're just going briefly through the rules. Committee rules to see how they apply at the subcommittee level. Mm-hmm. And it should be in your packet under the agenda for today. We're now up to Rule 10 on the back, which talks about a quorum for the subcommittee. The thing to note is that this subcommittee will effectively function as if it were two separate committees, a House committee and a Senate committee separately. And by that I mean that the House will vote and the Senate will vote, and in order for any action to be taken, both have to approve separately. On each side, you must have a quorum in order to go into work session to take any committee action. So on the House side, you need to have 3 representatives. On the Senate side, you need to have at least 2 senators. And of those that are present then, a majority on the House side of the representatives must approve any action, and a majority of the senators who are present on the Senate side must also approve any action for it to be taken.
Steve, the question, I haven't read these rules, obviously. Take a situation where all 5 members are present. Can the co-chair from the House also vote then, or does he have to vote for an absent member?
He does not have to vote for an absent member.
Okay.
He can vote whenever he chooses.
Okay. And so if he would be the 6th person and end up 3-3 tie, well, the bill obviously does not pass.
That's correct. If it's 3-3 and he's in the room, it would not pass.
Right. Okay.
Another thing that is different in the way a Ways and Means Subcommittee operates from other subcommittees or other full committees is shown here in rule number 11. The CIO's portion indicates that a subcommittee does not have the power to table or hold legislation, but it must report it back to the full committee for action.
Mm.
Now, this becomes less troublesome, perhaps, when you realize that there aren't too many bills that this subcommittee is going to get. The subcommittee will be getting, I think, a count of 15 budget bills, because each budget is an actual bill. It's a law that's passed. And what this rule is saying is, you've got to work that budget. You've got to get it out. You can't decide that you're not going to fund an agency or whatever. If the co-chairs have given you a budget and will indicate exactly which budgets you'll be working on, you must report that budget back. There will also be other bills that are assigned to subcommittee that get referred to Ways and Means, or in some cases that Ways and Means introduces. Generally, these will be fiscally related measures, but as the session comes toward an end and the substantive committees are shut down, Ways and Means continues to function throughout the remainder of the session. So at the end of the session, because there aren't other bills open, very often you will be getting bills that have nothing to, that don't have a fiscal impact and that aren't really of a budget impact, but that are sent here because they need to be worked through the process. The co-chairs assign these bills to a particular subcommittee, and when they do that, you're expected to act on it and return it to the full committee. You cannot, as a committee, get a bill from, as a subcommittee, if you want to work on a bill, you don't have any authority to get it from the co-chairs. The co-chairs have to, as part of their prerogative, is to assign bills to you. When a bill goes to Ways and Means, it sort of sits there and nothing can be done on it until the co-chairs assign it to one of the subcommittees.
And the effect of a subcommittee bill going back to the full committee with no recommendation would be acceptance of the appropriation that's in that bill?
No, actually, with no recommendation, in that particular case, you would recommend passage of the bill without amendment. So the bills that will be coming to you will be containing the governor's recommended budget. Those are what the budget bills will contain. Sometimes they have the right numbers, but there are minor technical errors that we point out to you and ask you to correct before you pass it on to full committee. But theoretically, if you're going to accept the governor's recommended budget for a particular agency, there would be a bill associated with that, and you would then report it back to full committee due pass.
Yes.
When you make changes, then you would have to amend that bill, and you would report it out due pass with amendments. Another thing that's to note about the Ways and Means Committee process is, because this is a joint committee, if you look at rule number 12, once the bill has been reported out of the subcommittee, you generally will not see it again, and it will not come back to a committee before it goes through the entire process. Almost all of the bills that you have this session, all of them except one, are Senate bills, which means that when the bills come out of Ways and Means, they will first go to the Senate floor. Then the typical process is they come back and the House co-chair, Representative Westland, will just sign off on the bill and it will go directly to the House floor without coming back to a committee for a second time. The House co-chair has, though, the authority, for whatever reason, to hold that bill, not to forward it back to the House floor and to redirect it back to the committee. So in a few cases, you may get to see a bill once, twice. You know, it'll go out, it'll go through one floor, then it'll come back to you. But generally, once the bill is out, you're not going to see it again. It's not going to be in any committee. It'll be voted on by both floors. And rule number 13 deals with language in budget reports. Each bill, the statutory language of a bill doesn't say very much. All it says is, we are going to give the agency this much money, And all it says is, well, of these types of funds that the agency already has, these are the other funds and the federal funds, they can spend up to this much. But in a budget, which is much more complex, very often you as a committee would want additional instructions given to the agency as to what you're approving and how you're expecting the funds to be spent. Those additional instructions are placed in a parallel document called a budget report that replaces the staff measure summary that other committees are producing. So when you and your colleagues are on the floor voting on a bill, you won't see a staff measure summary. Instead, you'll see a budget report, which is in lieu of that. But the budget report explains to the agency how you, what you're funding, how you're expecting them to fund, or how you're expecting them to operate their budget or execute their budget. Rule 13 limits the language that you can put in your budget report, though. It says that basically you can put in language that clarifies or expands upon administrative requirements which are directly related to the execution of budgets during the fiscal period covered, that's to say the biennium. However, you cannot put in your budget report items that are essentially policy decisions that are not budgetary decisions, something, for example, that you want to state as a permanent directive to the agency that extends beyond the current biennium, or if you don't like the way the agency is operating a particular program and you want them to change their operations and it's not really a budgetary matter, that language is not going to be accepted in budget reports by the committee, and you would need to pursue these items through the use of another bill. And these can't even go into the budget bill. The budget bills that you have can't have anything else in them except the budget. The relating clauses are very narrow. So if you have any policy directives to agencies that are not budgetary, and that these become clear to you as you're looking at their budgets and you're saying, hey, there's something wrong here, we need to direct the agency to do something in a different way, that has to be introduced through legislation in a separate bill. Those are the primary rules as they relate to the subcommittee functions. Are there any questions on that? If I may, then, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to talk about a number of other things that are going on. The next thing I'd like to talk about is sort of the committee work plan and what we know at this point that the co-chairs are going to ask you to do during this legislative session. I'm distributing here to you a list of the actual bills that the subcommittee, that the co-chairs have assigned to the Ways and Means so far. To the Education Subcommittee.
Thank you.
If you look here, these are the 15 or so bills that I've spoken to you or briefly referred to earlier. Each of these bills is the budget for a particular agency or for a particular portion of an agency's operations. If you just start from the top, you'll see that you have one bill for the Community College and Workforce Development Department. The funding for...
Excuse me, Steve, this is not the order that's going to come before.
No, these are actually in numerical order.
Okay.
Well, maybe not even that. I think they're in alphabetical order. I'm sorry. Then you have four bills to fund the Department of Education, one for the Department of Education's operations, one for its grant and aid programs, and two for the basic funding for schools. Usually in the past we've only had one bill, the state school fund bill, but this time the governor has introduced two bills, the regular state school fund bill and a separate bill for his school improvement fund proposal.
Reading initiative. Is that in there?
I think that it's not right in there. But I'm sorry, Sue McGlashan, would be able to answer that for you, and I just don't know that answer
for you.
Then there are the next three bills are Senate Bill 5521, the Health Licensing Office, then the Health-Related Licensing Boards, and you can see about 12 different boards there, and then finally the Health-Related Licensing Boards Fee Bill. What these are agencies that are not education agencies. They have nothing to do with education. The reason why they are here is there's a bit of a timing problem with the work of the subcommittee. You have very large budgets, very large general fund budgets, and it is not possible to make, or generally not possible, to make funding decisions, to make these large funding decisions very early in the session. The legislature needs time to figure out what all of the competing demands on the budget are, and in most cases, the legislature may need time to know exactly how many revenues are available during the course of the session. So what this means is for most of the agencies you see here, this subcommittee cannot really make any decisions early on in the session. And these health-related licensing boards are put in this subcommittee to give you some work to do, work that you can actually make decisions and move budgets on early in the session, because there are entirely other funds. That's not to say they don't have any issues involved, but they're not basically looking at how much of the general fund is available to fund them. The major education budgets, we do not expect you to start working on the major ones, meaning Department of Ed or the post-secondary education budgets, prior to the last week in February. Now that's subject to change, but until then, or up until then, what you will be working on is the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which is another other funds agency, and these health-related licensing boards and the Health Licensing Office. We also have tentatively scheduled the State Library in that period before the end of February. That is the general fund budget, but it is of a smaller size, a smaller magnitude, and we do believe that the committee may be able to make final decisions on funding of that early in the session, even though it is general fund.
Mr. Chair, Steve, when we start working on the ed and higher ed budgets, will we have start working after the forecast or just prior to the forecast?
You will start working on them before the forecast, and there are many issues. It takes a long time to really hear what the agencies are doing, how they're operating, what the budget issues are. So there's a lot to learn, in other words, before the decisions have to be made. So we can start, or you can start that process in February, and you still may not get through to that until later in the session to make the decisions, but it will take time. Some of these budgets, for example, education budgets, you might have easily 3 weeks of public hearings on that, the same from higher ed. It takes a lot of time to learn about what these agencies are and what their budget issues are. There are a lot of people who want to talk about.
Thank you, Senator Hurton. I thought there was some interest with regard to the K-12 budget, the state school fund, and trying to get that out early for the school districts to make decisions and that sort of thing. And
that still could happen, but it is more likely at this point. I'm saying that we are thinking of doing the other fund agencies first. And if it does turn out that that the body is ready to move on the state school fund, we can move that forward.
See, Steve, what drives that? Because Representative Schrader has mentioned an important issue of funding K-12 first, recognizing that finally that there would be some adjustment. Well, why can't we do that sooner than the third week in February?
It's not that you cannot do it. It's that it's difficult to do because it is such a large budget. It's like 43% of all the state budget right there. And when you start making decisions, because it's a large budget, the decisions tend to be fairly large. They might be, should this be $50 million higher or $50 million less? And when you start talking about $50 million and committing that at the beginning of the session, there are, you know, you might be able to add up 20 different state agencies that together don't spend $50 million in general fund. So you could wipe out all the money available for them if it turns out that there hasn't been some type of overall view of what the needs are and what the, what's possible to fund given the revenues that are available.
Do you recall when in the 99 session that the K-12 budget task force houses were approximately when?
I would have to check that again. It wasn't that early. I know that...
Hopefully that's not a good example of how we're going to act this.
I know what I'm trying to say. We're going to do better.
Yeah, good.
I think that it seems like it seems like there's a lot of interest always in moving the state school fund budget early because of the importance that members see in funding that program. And I think it becomes, though, more difficult to really do that in a situation where there's a lot of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And we even have a lot, probably more uncertainty on the revenue side than we have had in the past. Mm-hmm. The economy is doing uncertain, and it may be very difficult for the legislature to commit to a certain funding level, knowing that when the next forecast comes out, you know, it may be down, and that just may not be doable. Mm-hmm. I can't predict what you as legislators will do, and there is nothing legally that prevents you from voting out a state school fund bill early in the session if you can agree to how much will be funded, but it can cause, you know, serious budget problems later on, unless you really have time to look through everything.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Moore.
In terms of that approach, would it be possible, I guess it would be possible, advisable to work this budget as a subcommittee, arrive at some figure that we might all agree to, and then I guess if we were worried about forecasts and other things, he could put it on the shelf, our work having been done, and then if things come to pass and the forecast is acceptable, then it's ready.
That would be one way that you could work that out. Again, you would have to look at the pros and the cons of doing that. And one of the cons could be that if you are unable to support what you had originally proposed, it may not be entirely due to changes in the revenue forecast. It may just be due to more information that becomes available about competing state budget needs during this session. But that is certainly something you could do, and perhaps that would be something you would want to do.
Yeah, Steve, would you talk to Mike and the co-chairs and tell them this subcommittee has a great amount of interest in funding K-12 as early as possible, recognizing we may have to leave some blanks, not blanks, but put a figure in that would be subject to change later, possibly.
Okay, and we'll certainly convey that to you. That this discussion, I think, sort of leads into the co-chair process and how that works and what the co-chairs are doing as these subcommittees do their work. As you can see, you've got a subset of the budget, as do all of the other five subcommittees, to consider and to make decisions on. And the co-chairs are, of course, the ones who are making sure that all of the numbers and everything that each individual subcommittee is doing doesn't, you know, is consistent with the amount of revenues that are available, so that budgets aren't approved in total that exceed the amount of funds that are available. And they have this coordination process, and they work through to develop guidelines that they can return to the subcommittees as to how much funding would be available for these particular items. So the co-chairs will be working on this during the session. And we will be bringing back to you in our LFO recommendations. We will be not making any recommendations that are inconsistent.
That's right. I'd like to reflect that, Mr. Chairman, that the co-chairs are working on these numbers.
Oh, were you listening to
Yes.
Out of breath.
And I would respectfully remind the committee that we're still trying to get our grasp on the numbers. And I heard the comment about urging us to pass a budget and place it on the shelf, and I would just like to remind my good friend that we will do so in good time, under good judgment, with logic and reason involved, and a firm grasp on the numbers. But I would remind you that we can pass it at the governor's recommended level, which may in fact be an inaccurate number at this point. And so I would encourage you to be modest, go slow, be involved, be judicious, and not be precipitous. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. I know you also have a feeling for what your subcommittee would like to see done. We're certainly not going to run over. No. We don't have that opportunity.
I want to move on those health boards here. Can't wait to get my hands in that veterinary board.
You weren't going to pass on this before next Friday, were you, Tommy?
Where's the other co-chairman? Central Oregon. Anyway, where were we?
Okay. I'm still intact.
The co-chair was certainly out of breath when he came charging in here.
Well, I wasn't here to know what you...
Well, I just suggested that the majority of the committee would like to get to the detailed budget as early as we could, and the way it's lined out now, it would probably be the end of February. And the senator from Lake Oswego suggested that maybe we could work as a subcommittee just to learn about it and kind of set one aside.
Or a subcommittee already.
That's what he meant. Maybe this committee could proceed.
Okay, Steve, thank you. Go ahead.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the staff role in this committee and what we'll be doing to help you in this process. There are on the list that I've distributed, you can see at the bottom the list of the five LFO staff members who will be presenting budgets or working on various budgets for you this particular session. And indeed, that list indicates for each particular bill which analyst will be there. Most of the time, it will be either myself or Sue McGlashan who will be your analyst, because I do the post-secondary education. Sue does K through 12, and that's just about all of it. There is the last three LFO staff people will be here during the beginning because they work on the health-related licensing board budgets. So actually, over the next few weeks, you'll be seeing more of them than you will be seeing of either Sue or myself. But by the time the session is over, you'll have seen a lot of us. What we do is we will work with, I'm also the scheduler for this committee. If you or your staff have any questions about what's scheduled or when the committee is meeting, please ask them to refer to me. I will be meeting with the chair who does the actual scheduling, and we try to work along to enable the subcommittee to meet its work plan. And the intention is that every Thursday, we hope to be able to schedule the subcommittee for the following week. We will have that posted. And what you will receive, we've done that, and what you will receive is a weekly schedule. This is the schedule for next week.
You should get a copy of this.
We'll start with something like TSV. Just as a procedural matter, I have, in the past, when I've done this, I found that it's most useful to members if this is distributed to their offices, because I know that many of you use your office staff to schedule these things and to make sure your materials are available. So that's what we'll be doing. Showing this in committee like this is sort of an exception to what it will normally be, the process, but this will be the agenda that we'll be distributing to your staff. And if any of you would like to also have a copy personally delivered to you, just tell me. I'll make sure that you get a copy as well. We could probably do it on the Thursday afternoon meeting. The meetings are scheduled generally from Monday through Thursday, though some weeks it may be necessary to meet on Friday. and if that's the case, you'll be given special warning to let you know that this is an unusual meeting scheduled. As you can see, for the upcoming week, there's no meeting scheduled on Thursday, so...
We start at 8:30 or 8?
1 p.m.
1.
Oh,
we're at 8.
We're at
8. Are we 8:30 or 8?
We're 8:30. Steve, I have a question.
Sure.
Senator Miller.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I asked the chair.
Yeah, thank you.
I see the schedule here. We're hearing Senate Bill 5544 on Monday and Tuesday, and we're working 5016 on Wednesday.
Oh, that's an error. I'm very sorry.
I mean, it's always good to have a hearing before we work it. So.
5544. I know that the formal scheduling, which is the formal notification, is correct.
Okay,
I'm sorry that I missed
it. No problem.
See that. Everybody make that correction on Wednesday. Change the bill number to 5544.
Oh, okay, 5544. And then
the same bill for all 3 days. And that,
okay.
We're hoping that that will be enough time to actually finish that budget.
Senator Trow, based on your long-time experience on Ways and Means and on the subcommittees, is there a precedent, for instance, on the first public hearing on Monday of the TSPC to have, you know, invited testimony first, like David Mighton expressed the agency and other people, just as they're signing up, or how do you...
I think it's up to you. If you'd like to have some invited testimony. You ask Mr. Bender whether or not he thinks just the actual work session the information session is going to take, and if we have room for invited testimony, we have some room for that.
I would, members, like to talk about that a little bit in detail, because the co-chairs are asking that all of the subcommittees follow a pretty standard procedure in hearing budgets this time around. This is a change from prior practice where a lot of the budgets were presented in different formats. The Joint Legislative Budget Committee met during the interim and worked very hard to come up with a standard presentation format. Some of that was discussed during your full committee orientation, and the co-chairs have asked us to talk about it a bit more here in subcommittee. So I would like to mention that. But basically, many of the types of presentations that you had last session, we are hoping to have presentations in a different format, in a standard format. This was a format that legislators who had sat through Ways and Means last time looked at and tried to determine what was helpful and what was not helpful to them. So we hope that this will be an improvement and help you in your process.
But wouldn't it make sense to have those people testify first so that the public could be a little more specific, because these kind of meetings can go on forever unless they can address the budget?
You could go through the first two stages, and then when you get to the agency overview, ask them maybe to let them say a few words. There's a lot to do in the agency overview.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, maybe we should go directly to the format for presentations to subcommittees to discuss what we are expecting agencies to do in their presentation. Legislative Fiscal Office has been in contact with all agencies to remind them that this is the format that their budget presentations are to be made during the session. And I think to get directly to the question that you had, Mr. Chair, under this format, the invited test, there would be a very structured presentation of the budget. It would begin with the Legislative Fiscal Office analyst presenting a very high-level overview of the budget, of what the governor is proposing, over what the agency really does and where it gets its money from, and also to make note of things that would be presented later in the presentation and responded to by the agency. So, things that we would be looking at for each budget is we'll be looking at the budget notes that were in that agency's budget last session. These are specific directives to the agency on how to spend their money, and the agency will be required to respond to those budget notes or indicate how they responded to them. the same with any joint legislative audit committee reports or Secretary of State audits or other interim reports and task forces. The agencies will have to respond to those things. There will also be information about fee adjustments and other things that the agency, that the emergency board dealt with in the agency's budget. So we would start with a brief presentation, maybe only 10 minutes, by the legislative fiscal analyst, or even less perhaps, and then move on to a presentation by the head of the agency, and perhaps his or her top staff person, where they would go through and make an overview that for a small agency, like the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which you are going to be, is going to be first in your agenda, this might take 10 or 15 minutes. For a large agency, such as the Department of Education or the Department of Higher Education, this might take a day. But the head, agency head would talk about what their missions and goals are. And if I'm just going down here in Roman numeral 2A, they would provide certain organization charts, basically, to sum up what they will be doing or what they're supposed to be doing in Roman numeral 2, is talking about the major issues that their agency is facing, the major budget issues, and how they have responded to those. But we do have a series of specific items that they are supposed to respond to, and we are expecting every agency to organize its presentation and respond to these items in the same order and in the same format. Those of you who have served on Ways and Means in the past will immediately note that this is very different than the way things have been, where in some cases agencies may have started off and just had, you know, a bunch of people basically welcome, greeting you and saying, thanking you for what you've done and, you know, telling you basically what they hope to do in the future, and there might be whole groups of these people before you started talking about numbers and things such as that. This isn't going to happen this time. We're going to get into the numbers first. We're going to start looking at the budgets first, and after that would be the time when either the general public or others may come to present testimony to the subcommittee.
Steve, and that's where I'm really most interested in, you know, invited testimony. I'm talking about the stakeholders, you know, Lori Wimmer and Jim, the people that really have a position in this. And so my next question, okay, we pass this budget out, but in the substantive committee, education committee, they make some pretty radical policy changes. And so what does that do to this appropriations budget if we had passed it out?
That, sir, is another reason why in many instances we do not, or we, the Ways and Means Committee does not move a budget early. If we know that there are significant policy issues or substantive legislation that may affect the budgetary needs of the agency, many cases the budget will be held to see if those policy changes are adopted by the legislature. And if they are, the budget changes necessary are generally adopted. In some cases, they're not. In some cases, the agency is asked to come to the emergency board for funding. And in some cases, there's no funding provided for things that could impose costs on the agency, and they'll have to deal with that.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yep,
this process, if you were to have opened up for public or invited testimonies, this flow doesn't include it, or would you include it?
It would be included between Roman numerals 3 and, I'm sorry, 4 and 5. So it would be after the staff of an agency has gone through a detailed presentation. After this high-level presentation by the agency head, we would then move to the DAS analyst, who would present the governor's proposed budget for the first time and explain in detail what the governor is asking you to do, and defend what the governor's decisions are, to the extent that you have concerns about decisions that the governor has made. Afterwards, we then go into a much longer and more detailed presentation, which in some cases would take, for the larger agencies, could take, you know, over a week to go through this. For the smaller agencies, it might take a half hour. But where we would go through and look at in detail the agency programs. There are a number of things that we are asking agencies, or perhaps a better term, really, to be requiring agencies to report on back to you. And those include performance measures that the agency has adopted and that is that they are using to track their performance, as well as there are certain, we're requesting information about their use of facilities. I'm just sort of going back and forth here and just, you know, picking out things that are more obvious, but again, the idea is that the hope is to have standardized presentations so when an agency comes before you, you know what to expect them to address, what issues you expect them to address.
It also appears, looking at the categories, that it's also more performance related and getting at what the agency may or may not have done over the course of the biennium. If I look at the structure here, and
that's correct. Yes.
Senator Hartung, usually when you do have, if you have invited testimony, you wouldn't have a whole lot, and probably you'd ask each one to be pretty brief.
Yeah, and when I raised that question, I was thinking about, you know, in an earlier day when we used to have public hearings on a school reform or charter school, you just get a rush of people and have night meetings and all that, and I want to avoid that, but on the other hand, I want everyone to have a chance to say what they need to say. So I think you're absolutely right. One can limit what they want to say.
But I know we have, you know, last session we had long extended hearings on school finance, and we came back at night and, mm-hmm. and had hearings. And Mr. Benner, does this new structure rule that kind of thing out?
Or? It does not. That would, though, be accomplished between Section 4, Roman numeral 4, and Roman numeral 5. So it would be after the agency presentation.
That's pretty rigid as to when you would have it. Couldn't have it before.
Well, I will try to find out if the co-chairs have a specific preference on that or whether there's some more flexibility. But to me, it would seem like that would be the obvious time to do that.
Okay. Continue.
The final Roman numeral here, 5, is when you go into work session. In work session, your LFO budget analyst will actually present a recommendation to you. This is different than most legislative staff committees where the staff member does not make a formal recommendation, but at the request of the committee, your LFO staff does make a recommendation on each budget. And our recommendations, again, we base our recommendations on our understanding of the programs and the needs of the agency and the effectiveness of the programs. We also, again, will not make any recommendations that are inconsistent with the co-chair's directive to the subcommittees on the amount of funds that are available. So our recommendations will fall within those parameters, and you as a subcommittee will then make the decision as to whether to adopt the LFO recommendation or to make some other decision. During the work session, you will also adopt and vote for any budget notes that you wish to include as instructions to the agency, and that will then be reported back to the full committee, which usually the full committee is, for most of the session, the full committee work session after the subcommittee will be a Friday, not the Friday after you vote this out of subcommittee, but the following. Toward the end of the session, things need to be accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I still have on my agenda for today is I did have a very, very brief overview. If I may distribute this to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this. This, first of all, summarizes those principal committee rules that I went over earlier. And on the second page, it indicates the budgets again. Each one of these is a separate budget that you will be doing. I want to talk a little bit about fees and what the subcommittee does in relation to fees. There are a number of these agencies that have fee increases. The ones that have fee increases are many of the health-related licensing boards have fee increases. The Teacher Standards and Practices Commission has fee increases. And community colleges have fee increases. These fee increases must be voted on or approved in separate bills. So these are not the budget bills. These are separate bills. And you will have separate bills to carry to cover all of those. In addition, for higher ed has a proposed fee increase of the building fee, which is a fee that students pay when they enroll, that supports debt service on certain building projects. They're requesting a fee increase, so you will have to approve that if that were to occur. You probably have heard that there is a proposal for tuition fees to be increased as well. Actually, the State Board of Higher Education has authority to increase tuitions without any bill. So there is no specific bill that you would have to approve a fee tuition increase. However, in the budget itself, you will essentially be approving or not approving a tuition increase by either granting or not granting the agency the authority to spend the tuition rate. So when you give them another funds limitation, if you don't give them limitation to spend additional tuition and direct them not to increase the tuition, I mean, they'll have no incentive to increase tuition. But it's really the State Board of Higher Education that legally has the authority to determine tuition rates. So there will not be a separate bill there.
Steve, do I understand you say then that building fees never show up in the other fees category that make up tuition increases?
Actually, the building fee is a separate fee, and your budget does have to allow for those funds to be spent. The difference is that there is a statutory limit. The law says the building fee can be no higher. I think it's been $2,500 a quarter, and higher ed wants to raise that. And they can't do that unless you approve and change the law to the maximum that the fee can be. There is no law, though, that says tuition cannot be higher than $70,000. Tuition can be anything that the State Board of Higher Education sets it to be.
Tuition without the building fee.
Right. The tuition, the part that goes to fund just the general instructional services.
Any other questions?
Some of these charts you may have seen if you were in the full Ways and Means Committee orientation, but just at the bottom of page two, the budgets that you will be working on include in that pie chart the state school fund, the other ODE, ODE is other Department of Education, and the post-secondary budgets. So that's almost 57% of all general fund and lottery fund dollars, as the governor proposed, are in budgets that you will make the determinations on. So most state dollars are in the budgets of this subcommittee. The next two diagrams on page three, just look at what the governor's budget is proposing. So just to give you some ideas to the budgets that you will be looking at and what's in them in the most broad of terms, the education program area budgets are the governor's projecting expenditure increases of 10.5% over what was spent in the prior biennium, which is a little bit less than the overall growth rate of 13.2%. So his budget has education growing more slowly than the overall state budget. And if you look at the bottom of page three, that chart shows that when you look at the individual agencies in higher ed, there's even more fluctuation than there is between major program areas. The budgets here are growing everywhere from a negative 6.4% for OHSU or to an only less than 1% increase for OUS to, you know, higher increases, 11.2% for the state school fund and 37.8% for the programs of the Department of Education outside of the state school fund. And these are the budgets that the governor will be asking you to look at and the ones that he has submitted. the final diagram, and I apologize for this final diagram. It is very, it's not a good diagram, and it's hard to read, but it has a lot of information, and if you would bear with me just for a minute or two to explain what's in here, I think it might be helpful to you. This diagram shows the six basic budgets on education that you'll be looking at. And if you start reading from the right to the left, you see, on the right, there's OSAC, that's the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which supplies financial aid to post-secondary students. And there are three bars there under OSAC. The one on the very right, the dark-colored one, which says up 3.7%, shows that the governor is proposing a budget that is 3.7% higher than that agency's current service level. So there should be 3.7% more dollars than that agency needs to continue what it's doing now. And if you go to the left a bit, to the OHSU, you can see their similar diagram is up 2.5%. So there's 2.5% more than an OHSU's current service level. But the other two, now I'm going back to OSAC, the other two charts show how much is being cut from the existing budget and how much is being added for new programs or expanded programs that aren't currently funded. For OSAC, for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, they have almost no cuts. I mean, there are a few cuts there, but they're so small when you round it to the nearest percent, it's still 0%. And they have about 4% increase in funding above the current service level. And it's when you combine the two that you get that 3.7% increase on the right. That's a very different situation than OHSU. OHSU also has an increase of 2.5%, but that is composed as a combination of a cut in 6% of what it's, you know, of its budget, of the programs it's funding now, combined with 9% increase for new programs, and they net out to 2.5% overall. But clearly, you know, this type of budget, seeing a budget where you've got 9% increase coupled with 6% cuts that average out to 2.5% increase is a lot different than a budget where all you have is a 2.5% increase and nothing's cut. Mm-hmm. So OHSU is like that. OUS has very large cuts, 11% cuts. They also have substantial enhancements, 7% enhancements. On net, they have a cut. They're the only one of these budgets that on net has a cut from the current service level of 4.1%. Community colleges have the greatest enhancements of any in this particular budget, 10% for existing programs. But even here, there are, you know, cuts of 3%, which you'll have to look for through and at. And the governor would therefore propose a 7.3% increase overall. So this is what this is trying to look at the bottom line and just to split it up between things that are being added and things that are being subtracted to arrive at that bottom line. And this gives you some idea of the issues. This does, I guess this really gives you no idea of the issues you'll be working through, but this gives you some idea of what will be happening in the budgets, at least if the governor is proposing them to you, as you can decide to work through what programs you do want to fund and what new projects.
Anything else?
I don't have anything else unless you have any questions.
Yes?
Yes, Representative
Williams. Just to put it in perspective, it's kind of like give it with one hand and take it away with the other. In some cases, when you look at the increase one side and decrease the other.
I that was a question.
Oh, that was just a comment.
Okay. But you're absolutely right, and we have to identify where the cuts were in existing programs, mm-hmm, as compared
to the enhancements
and how that affected it. Any other questions? Okay. I want to thank you all for being a part of this committee. Looking forward to it. I've worked with all of you except Representative Smith, and look forward to...
Well, I look forward to serving on this committee, and I think it's going to be very rewarding, and I'm going to learn a lot.
Right. Well, we're all going to learn a lot. It's different than it's been before, but I know we will have a successful committee because two of us attended Jefferson High School.
Very good.
And we can do it. We will get it done if there's no other business. We are adjourned. And we're going to spend 80% of the
human service.